Thank you for joining us for the second in our series of evenings that make up our parish Lenten programme here in St Anne's. Tonight, Father Peter is in conversation with Jerry Kelly. Jerry has just been telling us that he answered the door one night to Leslie Dawes, UTV sports editor, who asked would he come and audition for a position in the sports department. It may very well have been that Leslie Dawes thought he was speaking to Danny. That's Jerry's brother, who played for Down at the time. Let's just hear what happened next.
So I went up and I did the audition, and I never told Danny that Leslie Dawes was probably looking for him. Now, Father.
Yes.
God bless me, Father. That yes. could well be a lie.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But like any good story, there's a little bit of truth
there
in
is
it.
I think there's a hint of truth in it.
That makes it okay.
Yes,
in
so
a
thank
sense.
You.
You know, it wasn't. So you weren't misleading.
It's just the 1 hour, Father. Then,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Okay. Yeah. So that got you into UTV.
That got me into UTV, I went up and I was doing. I didn't know much about. Well, I followed Danny. Obviously, I knew a bit about Dane, so I bought books on the matter. And I remember we were doing sportscast with Jackie Fullerton. Jackie and I are big friends from them. And we had no autocue. Autocue is the thing in front of a camera where you read. We write the script and you can read it. You think you're looking at the camera. So we didn't have it. There was no such thing as autocue back then. And I was the first night in sportscast. And Jackie said to me, Jerry, can I give you a bit of advice? He said, write out, try and remember your first two lines and deliver your two lines straight into the camera. And then after you do that, you can look up and down. And I'm going, thanks, Jackie. So I'm rehearsing all day. I'm going, I'd written it down. I'd learnt it. Going, it's a big weekend in GAA this weekend. Down's playing Derry and Donegal's playing Armagh. It's a big weekend in GAA this week. Down's playing Derry and Donegal's playing Armagh. It's a big weekend, said Down's playing Derry and Donegal's playing. So I'm sitting all ready to go. It was live programme. And Jackie, he was host of the programme. And he says, okay, time for GAA. He says, and it's a big weekend in GAA this weekend. Down's playing. Well, I looked at it, I thought, you. So he set me up. Totally that first night.
Yeah.
It's a good learning curve.
But that didn't last long because there was difficulties with...
There was difficulties because I was still working outside, and at that time to appear on television you had to be in the NUJ or Equity. You had to be in one of our other union. To be in the NUJ, two-thirds of your income had to come from journalism, which mine wasn't. So I was blacklisted. And I tried to get into the NUJ because I liked the idea of television. I thought, I do like this. So I spent yonks trying to get an NUJ card, but nobody would. So what I had to do was give up the job at Belfast City Council and go to the local Down Recorder for no money. And within 6-9 months, I got my NUJ card. And then within a few months of that, we were up to 1970. Yeah, 1970, 71. And Gloria Honeyford had come to UTV, and we were doing this programme called Good Evening Ulster, you may remember. And I was asked if I wanted to be a reporter on that, so that was my full-time job. So we got in, and I started in September of that year, and within 3 months there was a national strike, and we were out in strike for 4 months. I hadn't got a penny. I had to borrow money off the strike fund to do it. Had to sell my car. To and then we got back in after 4 months. But it was the longest strike in ITV history. I've had a hell of a life, you know. I'm feeling sorry for myself here now. I've gone through it all. I thought I was happy until I came here.
So, from there, what, 70, 72 to
God, Peter.
Getting into Kelly? Started.
I did a programme. I worked with Gloria, and Gloria left in 72. I'm on track 72. Now. And from 72, I then took over with Gary Gillespie. We took over Good Evening Ulster, disastrously, and we got the blame for it, and it wasn't our fault. Then they brought in a young fellow called Holmes, something, Eamon Holmes, something like that. They brought in, and we were dumped. And for a couple of years, I was doing very little and wasn't flavour of the month at all. I was doing a programme called Lifestyle, and Charlie Fitzgerald, who was the critic in the newsletter, met Charlie one night, and I said, Charlie, you've never written about Lifestyle. He said, I've never watched it. I said, well, watch it and write something about it. So he said, I will. About a fortnight later, there was a critique in the newsletter. I watched Lifestyle last night. It had neither life nor style. I thought, well, my career's gone down the chute here very quickly. So there was a couple of guys in UTV believed in me, and then they said, let's start with, we did Kelly on tour, we did Kelly's People, little six-week runs, leading up to about 79 then, 89 rather, when we got, no, it's, yeah, 89, 80, 80, I'm not 70s, yes, so this is all in the 80s. Yes. God, I was young, younger than yes, I thought I was. Right,
yeah.
And then we went with Kelly in 89, full time, and it started in September of 89. We were an hour long, and then by the first, we actually, it really broke into the Ulster psyche very quickly. Mm-hmm. We could, a very loyal audience, very quickly. We seemed to fill a gap that was in television that we hadn't seen. I copied the Late Late Show, like I copied Gay Byrne, like whatever he was doing, I would do it too. I thought he was the master of it all. More so than Parkinson. Parkinson's great on one-to-ones with the big film stars. Byrne could have turned his hand to anything. You know, he can do the sobest story, he could do the happiest story. He was just a huge talent. So we went down, Eamon Holmes and I went down to watch him one night. We just sat in the audience and just watched how he works. So that's what we sort of based it on. And by the start of 90, we had gone to an hour and a half. And then we never looked back from there. And we went on for 17 years doing it.
Eamon Holmes.
I wonder whatever happened.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, I've heard of him recently. Tell me, Eamon Holmes asked you to critique someone who was doing...
His cousin's here.
...something.
His cousin's here.
Is that right?
Can't say it.
Is John related?
John's related down there.
Is that right?
Flippin' say nothing about it.
So John's related to John?
No. Oh, yeah. There's a woman down there looking
yeah.
at me.
Yeah.
John asked... Eamon asked me to listen to the radio. He was on Downtown Radio at the time, and he asked me to listen. He's going to bring a relative of his on. And tell me what you think of him. So I listened in, and it was this character he called May McFetridge. And I listened because May is, am I right? May is Eamon's cousin. Hey, May is Eamon's wife. May's wife. Me, John's wife is Eamon's cousin.
Yes, that's right.
And I said, Eamon, I listened to him, and I says, it's not funny. Mm-hmm. I says, James Young, are we going to dance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
James Young, that. I said, James Young did it better. Everybody was doing that. Yeah. It's not funny at all. Funny. I didn't think it was funny. Mm-hmm. And then about 6 months afterwards, I was working with John, and he was doing we brought him in to do the warm-up on Kelly.
Yes.
And I got to know him and got to listen to him. Yes. We did a show in the Opera House together, and I really, really then got on to John's line. And John did the warm-up for us for the whole 17 years of the show. So, he did warm-up every Friday night. Except for the panto time.
Yes. John is a great...
John is a character. You should get him here one night.
Yeah, John's great, yeah. I've been on the receiving end of
I'm sure John. You have.
Many a time I find myself in the front row at a gathering, whatever, and sure whoever's in the front gets it. And certainly if you're a priest, you get it from John. And great, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Do you remember, and you recorded in your book about your first reels... meeting with a star and the being nervous, you know.
What did I say, Peter? What did I say?
Eartha.
Oh, Eartha Kitt.
Eartha Kitt.
Does anybody remember Eartha Kitt?
Eartha Kitt. See?
Wow, she frightened the life out of me. She was in Belfast and she came to us with a whole entourage of people into UTV and she had 5 or 6, 7 people with her. And she had a face like thunder on her. And I went down and said hello, and I just about got a low. Where's makeup and where's such and such and such and such? And I thought, oh my God, like my questions were useless. Anyway. So I was terrified of her. And I thought, she's just going to sit there with a face on her all night. So she came on, and see, once the red light came on the camera, she was up and smiling and giving the whole thing. But it was a great interview. Yeah. But she left straight afterwards. And I thought, yeah, I'll so and see. But she sent me a letter thanking me from Europa mm-hmm. with an Europa yes. headed notepaper, so she thanked
yes.
me.
Uh-huh.
But she did terrify me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was the start of it. Yeah, that was very early on.
Yeah. Another interview and the whole sequence of events, too, were tied around Brian Keenan.
Yeah, Brian was the big one. Brian was in Lebanon, and he, you remember, he was taken hostage. And we got to know his two sisters, and there was a sort of weekly thing in the Irish news about how many days he had been in captivity. And we had the two sisters, and we brought them in quite a while, and we got petitions signed, hundreds of thousands of signatures on the petition. And eventually word came through that he was to be released. And they flew him back to Dublin Airport, and I went down to Dublin Airport that night. There was a press conference. And Brian will tell you that he would have been medically mad at that stage. I remember the eyes were sunk in the head. But he was so eloquent, like really eloquent, describing what he had done. And I wanted him for the show. So he had to do the Late Late Show first because he was on an Irish passport and the Irish government had taken him over, so he really felt he had to do Gay Byrne first. But he did us on the next week. And when we brought him into the studio, he got a standing ovation. He's an amazing... His book, An Evil Cradling, is one of the finest books I've ever read, if you ever get a chance to read it. And it's not a daily this happened to me, it's a whole philosophy on life. It's a brilliant book. Yeah. And I've interviewed him. After we did Kelly, I did One to Ones, and I went over to Westport, where I still think he's living, and we did an hour long with him. And he's just a fascinating character, I have to say.
Yeah. It was wonderful. I remember that. You know,
yeah, I remember him walking in, and the audience that time just stood. And welcomed.
It was in awe at the journey that he had made.
They'd been through.
And how people got involved through his two sisters.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And yourself, and just the whole wanting the best for him, wanting.
That's exactly
absolutely.
The way it
and
was.
Terry Waite and, mm-hmm. and
yes, all that.
Well.
All that.
Absolutely.
And yeah. John, yeah. His mate, John MacArthur.
John
MacArthur.
John MacArthur, yeah. Okay. Jerry, during the show, and you mentioned Eartha Kitt staying in the Europa, you had that special relationship with the Europa.
Well, we had a special relationship with Drink Father, to tell you the gospel
right,
truth.
Okay. Yes.
We used the Europa because they were very good to us. But our parties after, you see, the problem was, this is confessions, oh my God. The problem with the Kelly show was, we came to the time where the troubles were still ablaze here. So it was very difficult to get big names to come to Belfast. Who would come to Belfast when you've just seen the news the night that such and such has been bombed and whatever? We managed to break that down because we had people working for us. But we decided that we would give the guests a good time when they came here. So we went to the Europa, and the Kelly parties in the Europa were legendary. Absolutely yes. Legendary. So they all had a great time. And nobody sort of ever... You know, Parkinson has had a few people buttoning up on him. I never had that because... People were almost giving 2 days of their life to come here because there was no flight out. There were no late flights out of Belfast. So they came here on a Friday. They couldn't get out to Saturday. So they weren't going to give me 2 days of their time not to talk on air. So like 99% of them were there to talk. But we went to the Europa and we had a night there each night.
Yes.
Father, yes.
Yeah. Yes. So that special relationship with Hastings. And you did a show or part of a show from the Europa.
We did a couple of shows from Europa. Like, during the... it was the night... Well, we did a New Year's Eve show. We get crashed New Year's Eve on the Europa's party, which was a mistake because we were going live at 12 o'clock. This was a party that people had paid £100 a ticket for, to the Europa, for dinner and drinks. Mm-hmm. By the time we got in there, everybody's blocked out of their head. Nobody wanted to listen to interviews or anything, so it was a disaster. But the night that they bombed the Europa and the Opera House, the night that was done, we went down and it was absolutely devastated. The Europa was gone. It was just before Christmas. I forget which year. And we thought we will show that Northern Ireland is bigger than... The IRA were not going to bomb Belfast out of Christmas, or bomb Christmas out of Belfast. So we went down during the live programme. We opened it from the Europa, and people were still in trying to have Christmas dinner and so on. So I did 10 or 15 minutes there. I linked back to the studio, which was a music act on. I would then take a taxi back to the studio, and we would continue with the show. So that all went well. We come back. We went to a break. I opened it up again from the studio. And within, I had Robbie Williams' father on at the time. And we had a bomb scare in through. And it was an authentic bomb scare. So I'm sitting there and I'm hearing, Jerry, we're going to have to evacuate the studio. We have to get out. So we had to get out that night. It was very easy. We got 3 bomb scares throughout the years. It was very easy to do because we couldn't take the chance. And if it was a coded password, we had to go. And I got 3 death threats throughout the time there. Once after I'd interviewed Pace, we decided at the time we would never do political interviews. We thought Friday night was a fun night. There was enough politics going on. There was enough bad news. So we wouldn't do a political interview. But we had Paisley on one night because the guy, Jones, where he supposedly bought his degree from, mm-hmm. Bob Jones University, we had him over. And so we had Paisley on talking about him. So that was the Friday night. And it was grand. And Paisley was in great form. And ha, 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 all the way through. And on the Monday, when I got in, I was told they called me up to the boardroom and says, the police have been on and there's a death threat towards you. And I says, me? I says, I'm interviewing Paisley and they're going to kill me. Like, what the hell? They got this wrong. They said, no, it was you. It was you. So Paisley phoned me that week and he says, Jerry, says, the only good thing about us, they're not going to phone you to tell you they're going to kill you. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, well, fair enough, fair enough. Yes. But there was three death threats, and one we had to take very seriously, which, I mean, I had to go home and tell Alina and the kids that, you know, you've got to check the car in the morning. You really do have to check the car. There was one night the death threat had come through, and the police said to me, don't worry, we'll follow you home. We'll be there. You will not see us, but we will follow you back to Hourglass. So I was driving a Renault something or other, and it was one of those ones where it tells you if you're running out of petrol or if there's your windows open or something. And I'm sitting and I'm looking in the window, where are the police? And I can see the white of my knuckles howling on this. And I'm near home and I thought, thank God, I'm near home, there's no bother. And all I could hear was, you're low on petrol. Well, I looked around. I thought there was somebody in the back of the seat waiting for me all the time, the car talking to me. But I didn't, you know, it was just anybody could pick up a phone and say that, you know, there's a death threat. Anyway. So I never took them really serious, except that one where we did check under the cars for a week or two.
You mentioned Gay Byrne and going to the Late Late Show with your Eamon. You did a collaboration with Gay at one stage.
We did. I remember saying we had an idea that we wanted to talk about Southerners living and working in the North and Northerners living and working in the South. And we went to Gay Byrne and we said, could we do an interview? Could we link up for half an hour? Because he was on the same time as we were. Could we link up? And you have the Northerners living down south, and we'll have the Southerners working up north, and we'll get together for half an hour. So we went down to see him, and he loved the idea, so much so, and he says, I'll tell you what, you come down, and we'll give you the show. Mm-hmm. So we went down, and he gave me the seat. We did an hour of the Late Late Show and the Kelly Show together. So I had a seat and welcomed them all, and we did the interview for an hour, which was very gracious of him. And I thought, he said, you want me to sit in, Jerry, or go? I thought, oh, please go. And I said, oh, sit in if you wish, Gay. Thinking that he's going to take over. He's going to do the interview, you know. But he didn't. He sat there. He contributed a bit. But the problem was we found plenty of Southerners working up north. We couldn't find very many Northerners living down south at that stage. Yeah. No, sorry, the other way around. We got them all down south. Yeah. Couldn't find them up north. Yes. Yeah. Changed days. So, and then he never gave me the job once he left.
But 17 years of Kelly Show, lots of awards, lots, you know, and, oh, what, I jotted down kind of numbers you were talking about. 17 years, 570 programmes, 3,500 interviews, 1,500 musical acts.
Yeah, we were right.
Over that period. You know?
I'm sure over that period you know? Count them up.
And I'm thinking, in your book you speak about one gentleman who was most inspiring, most caring. Gordon Wilson.
Gordon Wilson from Enniskillen. Mm-hmm. I was, after OMA, I was sitting on the Enniskillen Bursary Awards. There was a committee set up, and it was to give out awards to young people. And it was funded through the Enniskillen Bursary Awards, and Gordon was on the on that panel, and I've never met a nicer man in all my life. And when you go home, when you look back at the old footage and you hear interviews of Gordon talking about the forgiveness that he did with his daughter, of those who killed his daughter, he was just an amazing man. He really was the embodiment of Christianity and what it should be about here.
Yeah. It's occasions like that that stay with you.
Yeah, because television's not real. You know, it's only when you meet real people that you begin to appreciate it. Television is such an artificial situation. You don't sit and talk. I'll ask a question and you answer it. And you have 3, 4, 5 cameras running around you. So it's totally artificial. And it's show busy and all the rest. So when you meet someone as true and as sincere and as honest as God, you realise what life's all about.
Yeah. Another occasion was in October 2005. I think it was Gerry Adams.
Hmm.
And an important kind of...
Towards the end, we decided we would do a political interview. This was nearly towards the end of Kelly. And we sat down and we thought, we'll bring on Adams. This was way after the Good Friday Agreement. We'll bring on Adams and we'll bring on Paisley. Adams 1 week and Paisley the next week as head of their respective parties. And we're to ask the question, where are you going to take us? Not looking back. Don't want to hear anything about what has happened up to now. Where are you going to lead us? So 1 week we'll do Sinn Féin, the next week we'll do the DUP. So the Sinner said that they would do it. DUP hemmed and hawed and said, well, we'll hear what Gerry Adams has to say before we do it. We thought this isn't going to work if one of them pull out because you're only going to have half the argument. So we had hoped, we ran with it anyway, even though we hadn't got a decision with the DUP, we ran with the Sinn Féin and Adams was on. And Adams is a very, very difficult man to interview. He is a very clever man. He's an answer for everything. And unless you know your history and well briefed, you will not get one up on him. So he's got stock answers and he'll take you way back. So it was going all right. And I remember he finished off one line saying, I don't know what else I could do, something to that effect, from one last question. And I says to him, well, I tell you what you could do, Mr. Adams. You could say the war is over. Now, everybody at that stage, if you recall, wanted Sinn Féin to say the war is over, and they wouldn't say it. He said it on Kelly that night. He says the war is obviously over. And I was about to ask the next question. I thought, did you just say the war is over?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it was towards the end of the interview, and I hadn't much time to progress it, but he did say it that night. So that was big news all weekend. Telegraph, they all ran with the war is over. And Paisley never turned up the next Friday. We didn't come on. Never come on, no.
Okay. Yeah.
Which was a shame.
Yes.
Which was a shame.
Yeah. A big music star you had on, Kelly, was Garth Brooks,
mm-hmm.
who did, was it 5 or 6 shows he was doing in Dublin?
Yeah.
And you got him to Belfast.
I met him in Dublin.
Havelock House.
We got him into Havelock House.
Yeah.
I said to him, when he was doing the first, we went down to cover. And we were at the press conference and I was talking to him. And I said, are you going to come to Belfast? And he asked me who I was and all the rest. And he says, well, I'll come to Belfast the next time I come. Which I thought was just a show busy talk, you know. And he came and he came and he said he came because he promised Belfast that he would come. And he did. And at the time, he was the biggest selling artist in the world. Outdoing, everybody added together. He was enormous. And I didn't see his show that time, although I lied to his another life, Father.
Uh-huh.
I lied to him and told him I did. I hadn't seen it. But I went down this year with Martin and Mary, and it was crap. It means it wasn't very good, Father.
But one of the things you relate is that night after Havelock House, when he left.
We were going live, and of course, once it's live, everybody knew that we'd be in Havelock House in the Armour Road, so they all come down to see him afterwards. And it was a wet November night, I remember it well, and he was leaving the studios about 12 or half 12, whatever it was, and there must have been, I would say, 400, 500, 600 people outside waiting on him. And he stood and signed. He was staying in Dublin that night. He had to get back to Dublin, and he had a big tour bus there. He signed every autograph, and he posed for every selfie and photograph that was asked of him. And when it rained, he said to the people, go and sit on the bus out of the rain. And he sat, he didn't leave UTV, Havelock House that morning, to about 3:30 in the morning. He signed everything that night. I found him very genuine, to tell you the truth, a very genuine man.
It's good to hear that about someone in that kind of...
level
of entertainment would give so much time to people outside. I want to take you to... I have a photograph there. This is your siblings, okay? Your three beloved sisters and your brother Danny. That's an old... That's taken a few years ago.
That's some of these weddings. How do you know it was taken a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
How can you tell? How can you tell, Peter? I wonder how you...
It's just something about Danny that...
Oh, that was Danny. Danny gave it away. Is it Danny gave it away?
It's Danny gave it away. Absolutely, you know.
Was it a wedding? Yes. I don't know whose wedding it was. Well, St. Agnes is our rehearsing down below today. That's Patricia Lundy. Patricia was in St. Agnes's for all her life. Mm-hmm. This is Danny, this is Stella. Patricia's the eldest. Kathleen's next. Stella, then Danny, and then me. Stella lives in Whitby, in Yorkshire. Mm-hmm. Kathleen, unfortunately, died 8 years ago. And Patricia, more unfortunate, is suffering from dementia at the moment, which is very, very sad. Danny's in Scotland. And actually, he was home at the weekend. So that's the family. But Stella misses them. She's lost her two sisters virtually.
Yes. Yeah. And Lisa, yourself and Helena.
God, that's even further back.
Your beloved daughters, Sarah and Claire.
This is Sarah. She's married with three children, lives in Kildare.
You have three grandchildren.
Three grandchildren. That's Claire, who she was living in Dublin. She's just come up from Dublin. She's back in Northern Ireland. She came up just before Christmas, so she's coming back up to live here now. Mm-hmm. She's fed up with Dublin. Mm-hmm. Helena's still with me, and that's and the three grandchildren there. That's what it's all about nowadays.
But you couldn't see them at Christmas.
Not this Christmas.
Yeah.
No, that's right. Well, you see that. What happened? Did COVID?
COVID.
They had COVID just before Christmas. But there's a problem anyway, you see, because they have to go... She's married to a guy from Tipperary. So they have to go to his house one Christmas. Yeah, and then our house the next. And I hate it. And I hate it when they have to go to his house. And Sarah doesn't want to go to his house. but it was our turn this year. We were going to have them.
Okay.
They had COVID the flaming week before. So we didn't see them until about 3 days before Christmas.
The turkey had to
Unstuff the turkey for them.
But
we got them up.
Yeah.
But it's all about the three grandchildren now. Yeah. That's,
and Claire is singing in the Dublin Gospel Choir.
She sang for 11 years in the Dublin Gospel Choir and has just left it. And it's breaking her heart because she's back up here. She can't go down every week for rehearsals.
Okay.
But she was making with the Make-A-Wish Foundation in Dublin, so that's what she did. So she's left all that, she's back here. She's looking for a job if anybody's interested. And
would you like to hear a little bit of Claire?
Oh, this is her. Now, think of Christmas. They
this
recorded
bring you back
this.
To Christmas.
This is Christmas.
Lonely the world.
obviously she's gifted like yourself.
Takes after her mother. Takes after her mother. Yeah.
Yeah. Helena would have. I was aware that she sang in the folk group in our glass.
Yes. Yes. She sang in the club. The chapel. Yeah. She did that. Yeah.
Okay.
She was a lovely singer. She was a great singer, actually. Doesn't sing much now, but Claire's following on.
New Year's Eve in the Kelly household.
Well, to tell you the truth...
You did a show from your house.
Yeah, but see, that's another lie. You see.
But you actually say that in the book, too.
Yeah, well, it's not a lie. It's not a lie.
No, no. It's a pretend...
It's a pretend lie.
Pretend lie, yeah, okay. Yes.
Christmas Eve in the Kelly house... New Year's Eve, thank you.
New Year's Eve, yes. Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve, New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve in the Kelly house was in darkness because we recorded the shows in our house for New Year's Eve, but we recorded them at the 1st of November. So we were wishing everybody a Happy New Year on November the 1st and singing Auld Lang Syne and old acquaintance. And you're going, it's only the 1st of November, Christmas hadn't even happened. So we recorded them all each November. So come New Year's Eve, people are driving around our glass around our house to see where the party is, of course. And they're coming knocking on the door, so we had to put the lights out and hide it and behind the things. But they were the... When people talk about the Kelly show, most people would say to me, oh, remember the New Year's Eve shows in your house? Yeah. They were very successful because they were in the house. Yeah. But they were an awful nuisance. We lived, as I say, in our glass at the time. And to bring an outside broadcast unit down, it's massive. Like, there's something like one of the guys told me, there's 8 miles of cable has to get into the house. Now, the only way you get into a buddy's house is through windows. And they took them a week to set up. So our windows were open for a week. And you see when you put
in
on...
In November.
You see when you put on big lights like that, there's dust everywhere. My wife was mortified. She's running around dusting every day. But there's more dust. At one stage, you couldn't get under one of our doors. They cut a bit off the top of the door and put a thing underneath it. It was like mysterious, and that was for a whole week. Never again.
That's it. Never again. Yeah. Helena was a hairdresser.
Yes.
And I'm just conscious that maybe you know what part she had to play.
No part. You don't think that was looked after, do you?
Look at that.
That just grew.
No.
I thought when I got older that I would lose things. You know, my sex appeal, my good looks. I never thought I'd ever lose my hair. I cannot believe it. My hair was, that was tight, tight curl. People used to think I permed it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was the way, but that was me.
Yeah.
Little Lord Fauntleroy look.
And did Helena cut your hair? Did she trim your beard?
No. I used to comb it with, those afro combs there?
Yeah,
that's what I used to do out there. Didn't need cut, it just grew.
Okay.
No. That's scary, isn't it?
Tell me, Jerry.
Yeah.
Do you cook?
I'm all right.
Yeah. What's your favourite dish to prepare? What are you good at?
I cook anything.
Yeah. Yes.
No, we would eat a lot of chicken. Like, I wouldn't
like chicken.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if you were going out for a meal, what would your favourite dish be?
Chicken.
Something like chicken. Okay. Some kind of chicken.
Okay. I thought this was leading somewhere. No.
I'm just interested in culinary skills.
Oh, culinary skills. Oh, they're okay. Thanks, Father. Yes.
And do you take your vegetables and?
Oh, I take my greens, Father.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, Father.
Okay. What about DIY around the house?
No, Father. Don't do any of that at all.
Okay.
I'm useless at that.
You don't have a power drill or?
Yes.
Oh,
unused.
Still in the box.
Just underneath the sink, sitting there.
If anybody needs
brand
it.
Brand new. Put it on eBay, 25 quid in years.
Very good.
Never used.
Okay. Painting and decorating?
No.
Do you know
what I do?
What about hanging curtains? Do you know, like Martin?
Oh, not as good as that.
Yeah. No.
Do you know what I do?
Yeah.
I paint. I paint by numbers.
I heard that recently.
What are you laughing at?
Painting by numbers.
What?
Wow.
Have you not done paint by numbers? Today's paint by numbers. Do you do it? No. Today's paint-by-numbers are brilliant. No. Today's paint-by-numbers are really, really, really good. And I sit and paint. I would do it for hours. I can sit on the table and do it for hours. Uh-huh. Find it very relaxing. So if you're over 50, get paint. Oh, geez, if you're over 60, if you're over 70, get your paint by numbers. It eases the mind.
Yeah. So that's... Try it. That's one of your other hobby. Yeah.
Well, I sitting there and I would do it for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
I enjoy doing it, actually.
And
seriously.
When you do it, do you get them framed and hung up?
No, I don't. I throw them away, actually. Everybody, yeah. My wife wants to frame them. Yeah, she thinks they're worthy of framing.
Yeah. Okay.
God love her. I'm just happy to do them and just move on to the next one.
Yeah.
But I must say, now I'm sure I've got 40 or 50 done.
Okay.
Get them off Amazon.
Uh-huh. Beautiful. Yeah. What about gardening?
Are you having a laugh? No, I cut the grass, and that's the height of it. Thank God, in Coney Island, nothing grows down there. Flowers don't grow. You don't have to attend flowers.
Okay. Really. Yeah.
So I don't do any of that. Okay. I just spend my time golfing. I'm a great golfer.
What about the young fella from Hollywood? You
taught him everything
show?
I knew. There he is.
Yeah. On the washing machine.
Taught him everything I knew. This was in 1998, 1999. And we had heard of this young fella, Rory McIlroy, who just won the World Under 10 Championships. And we thought, it's worthy of an interview. So we went out to see his mum, and it was in the winter. And we said to him, how does he practice in the winter? Because when he comes home from school, it's dark. He can't practice. And she said, well, actually, down the hallway, we opened the door of the kitchen, and he chips into the washing machine. And we thought, great idea. We got an old washing machine, and we brought him in. And we asked him to chip into it just as an interview. That has been seen, I don't know how many millions of times on YouTube. If I had a penny every time that was shown, I wouldn't be here for it.
Yeah.
And that's how I started.
Yeah. And you didn't get your ball into the machine.
No, it's a very difficult shot, actually. Yeah. That's not easy to do.
It's not. No.
He missed the first couple and then did it every time.
Yeah.
And about 5 years ago, Paddy, thinking me Bob, the rugby player, was having a dinner for his charity, and he'd Rory over, and it was in the Titanic building, and he said to me, would you come up and recreate this on the stage with Rory? So we did it on the stage up at the Titanic, and the idea was everybody would put a fiver in, and you had to stand up and put your hand on your head if you thought he was going to put it into the machine, or hands on your backside if he was going to miss it, you know, just to raise money. And if you were wrong, you sat down until there was one left. He never missed. So it was getting stupid, so we had to ask him to stop and get other people up to see if they would miss it. But he's I liked him then as a child, and I like him even more now. Not only as a golfer, but as a spokesperson and all the rest. He speaks exceptionally well and loves this place, loves his rugby.
Yeah.
Comes back quite
a great ambassador.
Great ambassador for here and for golf, absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. You mentioned the charity events. You've been involved in Concern Worldwide at different times, visiting Mozambique and Darfur.
We were out in Darfur, which Darfur was hell, absolute hell. Mm-hmm. We were in South Sudan. Mm-hmm. Concern took us out, and the civil war was raging at the time. And these rebels called the Djangawid, they were just killed, raped, pillaged all the way down. And it was awful. It was awful as we went through village after village after village. And you look at the aid that Concern was able to bring. Like, it's not much more than a sheet of thing you make a little house out of and a bit of food and so on. But at that stage, when we went out, it was the worst disaster in humanity at the time. It was the worst happening in the world. And it's even got worse again. So that was an eye-opener. We went to Mozambique, but we saw the good side of where the money from Concern goes to. So we saw the improvements that were happening there. We were also out in Chernobyl after the nuclear one. We went to Romania. We visited the orphanages in Romania. I remember getting into a room three times this size, just cot after cot after cot of little babies. And that was terrible. And I remember we one of them took to me, and she was sitting on my knee, she was about three, and she was such a lovely wee girl, and I got very fond of her after the week we were there, and people were adopting at the time, and I come back here and asked, I tried to get an adoption going, but they wouldn't allow it. I thought I would have adopted just to get her out of Romania. Yeah. This was just after Ceausescu and all that happened there. Yeah. Yeah. It was uplifting,
yeah.
But horrible to see so many orphans in this. It was three times the size of this room of cots.
Uh-huh. You're involved in a local charity, Northern Ireland Children.
I love this one. Yeah, I'm president of the Northern. We started it up. Well, I did. Well, I did. I've been trustee of it. Jack Rogers, a mate of mine, he started it up. Mm-hmm. And we take away terminally ill, life-limited children to Lapland once a year. Mm-hmm. This is our, last year was our 12th or 13th year, I think. So we take a plane load. We hire, rent a plane, take them out. We take about 100 kids. The plane's full because we've got parents and siblings and medical staff, doctors, all their equipment. And these are very seriously ill children. So we take away 100 a year. So we've taken over about 1,300 this year. We also put Days to Remember Trust in it because there's some children just can't hack the weather. It's too cold for them, so they can't go. So we brought in Days to Remember Trust. So this May, we're taking 10 families off to Disney in Paris because they can't take the cold weather. But it is the most heartwarming charity I've ever been involved in. To see the excitement in these kids' face. Excuse me, we went just the week before Christmas, and to see the excitement in their face as they see Santa Claus. And we bring in huskies and skidoos and all this and reindeer, and they have an absolute ball. It's a very exhausting day. It's a one-day trip. They're coming from all over Northern Ireland. We leave Belfast about 8 in the morning. We get there, there's a two-hour gap difference, and we're back in Belfast at 10 o'clock that night. Now, there's people coming from Derry and Strabane and all the rest, so they're leaving at 3 and 4 in the morning to be there, and they're not getting back to 2 and 3 at night. But exhausted though everybody is, nobody minds. It is a wonderful, wonderful day. So it's a complete charity. We have to raise the money each year ourselves. It costs about the guts of 100,000 each year to take the plane away. But we've been very lucky this past. We have a lot of corporate sponsors, and because of COVID, we couldn't go away. We did another little scheme, but it didn't cost us anywhere near that amount of money. So we've built up a little reservoir of money that'll keep us going. But we will spend it on other ideas that does not just on Lapland. Okay. But it's very close to my heart now. Yeah. That's Colin Barclay, who's our chairman.
Wonderful. Yeah. You're now involved with students at the Met, and have been since summer last year?
We started. Linda Bryant, she used to work in UTV. Linda's a lecturer at the Belfast Met. And she was speaking to us one day, because there's the media college down there. She lectures in the media. And she asked us, you know, how could we help? So there was a lot of retired engineers, sound men, cameramen, all retired from UTV. So we thought, we'll all get together. We'll go and do a program. They brought me in then to do a sort of chat show, a sort of Kelly show. And we were involved with the students. The students would listen, watch what the professionals were doing. And then they would do it on cameras and sound and so on. So we did 8 programs before Christmas, and we called it Tonight with Gerry Kelly. Sadly, nobody saw it because nobody knows how to find NITV or whatever the heck you call it.
NTV.
Nobody can find the blimmer thing. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's on Channel 7 on Freeview.
Channel 7.
But nobody can find it. So, and then it was on YouTube. And then, so it's a pity that nobody saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we've done a best of. So you'll be able to see it. That's going to go out shortly.
Uh-huh. But if you go to the NTV website,
yes,
it's available there.
But nobody seems to know how to get it. It is difficult to get.
That's right.
Because most people are Sky, and everybody thinks it's on Sky.
That's right.
And they go, it's not on my Sky. Well, it's not on Sky.
It's not on Sky.
But it was worth the doing for the students' sake.
Sure.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's part of their CV.
So they're actually learning as they work.
They're learning on the job. You know, yes, it's like.
And it's great.
It's like learning to drive. You only actually learn to drive after you pass your license. You get your license, that's when you really learn to drive. So to work with the professionals and to watch them do it is a major bonus. So it's something for their CVs that they were involved in a live television show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gerry, you live in a very beautiful part of the world, and that's the view. Outside your
That's my front garden there. Yeah.
That's your front garden.
I told you I didn't do any gardening, didn't I?
Yes. Beautiful Coney Island.
That's beautiful Coney Island.
Gerry, My first camping holiday was Coney Island.
Are you one of those wee buggers just to go down there?
In August.
And light fires and all on the island.
August 1969.
Really?
In the Coney Island Caravan Park.
Oh, you were across the road.
Myself and my great friend, John Cushnan, who was about 6'3".
John Cushnan, the...
God rest him. He was a barrister. He became a barrister. But myself and John spent a week in this tent. The tent was maybe probably about 5 feet by 3 feet. And just over hedge.
You would have fitted in all right.
I fit in. But I think John's feet stuck out, you know. But we spent a week, you know, all around there, wandering on the beach, into our glass, down to the harbour. Then we go the other direction, down to Killock. You know?
You worked in Killock.
And then, you know, that's the part of the world that I was before I came to St Anne's. I was next door, and I would have been over there many a time. And that's the famous 11th hole in our glass golf.
That's it. It's a par 5.
That's par 5.
I normally bury it. That's my house over
and
there.
Jerry's house is up there. It's over there. And Coney Island.
That's it. And Jerry, that's Van Morrison's Coney Island.
The hole before that, the 10th, par 3.
Yeah.
Did you ever reach the stage at the 10th? You know.
Don't you ask a question I think you're going
to
ask.
No, I'm not going to ask it. I was told to avoid that.
Don't ask that question.
All right, I won't ask that question. But
when you say...
Devlin would ask.
I knew exactly where you were going with this one. Yeah.
No. I was thinking, was there ever a day when your golf was so bad, you know, and you're, I'm getting nowhere, and you get to the 10th, and you mess up the 10th, you go off to the right, and it goes over the road, over the hedge, the 10th, and you throw up the head and say, right, that's it, I'm going home. And you just go down and over the fence and walk along and home, instead of going back with the other three. Were you ever in that situation that you felt like Martin, did he? Yeah.
Just the once. Shut up, you. Just the once, Father. Just the once.
Yeah.
I think we'll take a short break.
We'll be back. But then, Argyll. Tell me about...
Oh, we did the Camino.
The Camino in 2018.
Well, I was working with BBC Radio Ulster at the time, and we decided we would do the Camino. But I didn't do the Camino as such. We went to, we were about, Mary, what do you call the town?
Saria.
Saria, that's where we started.
Yeah.
I know it's cheating, but we were doing a radio show. And so I walked for 2 or 3 days, but then we had to move on, so we had to drive on. So in effect, I didn't actually do the Camino. But I did enough to discover that it's an amazing experience to do that. And during that, it was, I think this was, was this 2016, was it?
2018.
Mm-hmm. And because you get quite contemplative in it, and you do come in on yourself and think about yourself. In 2016, I was diagnosed with cancer of the bladder, and it had been sort of, it'd been cleared, they got it apparently, and I was being tested. And it wasn't really affecting my life until I went on the Camino. And as you walk, you think, and you think, what's happening? And I remember contemplating that and what life was going to be like in the future and so on. But the bit that I did do, I thoroughly enjoyed. I think I would like to do it again and do it properly.
Yes.
But whether I do it or not, somehow I doubt it now at my age. But
I did it 9 years ago. Did you? Sorry, back to Santiago, 6 days.
Yeah.
Not staying in the hostels, but staying in hotels.
Oh, nice.
Which, you know,
that's my idea.
And they carry your bag from one hotel to the next. So
that's right, that's really right.
But the walking, I remember the first day, I did a lot of training prior to it, a lot of walking around Arglass, Killock, and out to Strangford. And I remember the first day of the walk, leaving Saria, got up early in the morning, and I think it was 7 o'clock in the morning, stepping out of the hotel, right, this is it, and went off. And I would be a brisk walker. And I reached the hotel at lunchtime. I thought, wait a minute, this
I need to slow down. This is not a race.
Yes.
is a, you know, this is a Camino. Yes. This is a pilgrimage. This is, and that got me the first day.
Yeah, you have to take your time.
Slow down.
Yeah, you have to take your time. And take your coffee. People. Take your coffee break and talk to people.
Meeting people from all over the world, all types of people, and all there for different reasons.
Yes.
And some spiritual, some not, and whatever.
Well, that's what we were doing. We were interviewing people. With that. I found it a bit of an anticlimax when we got actually in the city. I thought, that's it. Is that it over? Is this what it's all about? And it stopped. I found it slightly anticlimactic.
Yeah. Well, at the end, I remember walking onto the cobbles outside the cathedral, and standing there and having walked 6 days, I filled up. Totally emotional, you know.
Yeah.
And I had the privilege of staying in Santiago a couple of days there. And I spent those next few days on those cobbles welcoming other pilgrims back. Because that's what happened to me when I arrived.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, Gran Camino.
There's something about it.
Yes.
It can be whatever you want. It can be spiritual, it can be religious, it can be just a walk if that's all you want, but it can be what you want it to be. Yeah, you decide what you want.
Yeah.
I found it quite therapeutic. Uh-huh. Did you walk on out to
Finisterre?
No,
didn't go to Finisterre. We'll talk about that. That's the end of the world.
That's the end of the world. Finisterre.
So, what I'm thinking of now, I'm thinking, Jerry, about all the different people that you've interviewed.
Yes.
Over the years, and I thought, what about a little quiz?
Great idea. No, not for me, for you. No, for you. No, this is your quiz. We're going to show you photographs. This is the first year of Kelly, the very first year of Kelly, and some of the guests that were on the first year of Kelly. So I'm going back to 1989-1990. And you can shout out, who are these people? Balcom Brody, you wouldn't know the guy in the middle. He's Derek Murray. He was an executive at UTV. And Jackie, you're off. Alex Higgins. Norman Whiteside. Well done. I'll let you wave at Coronation Street. That's Curly, yes. Oh, boy, there's a good down the back. Laurie McManamy, yes. Alex. No, you just saw the wee hat, didn't you? Mid-year, well done. Guy that put together... Lord Charles, well done. Emlyn Hughes, Liverpool captain. Honor Blackman, yes. Yosser out of Boys from the Black Stuff. Gives a job. Yeah. Palm Ayres, yeah. Niall Tobin. Dana.
Ooh.
No, you don't know this one. Even when I tell you, you'll go, who? That's Mark Almond. Oh, you do know. Jeff Hurst, yeah. What's
Willie.
His name? Willie Carson, yeah. Bob Champion, won the Grand National. Part of a double act, this guy. Yes, who said that? Two points. Hale and Pace. Uh-huh. Gareth Fitzgerald. Rula Lanska. Yeah. Oh, very good, John. Very good. Roy Hattersley. Ted Lowe. Well done, the snooker commentator. I have no idea who she is. I can't think of it. No, it's not. No, she was a journalist. She was a.
No.
Oh, I can't remember her name. Yeah. Can't remember her name. Sorry. Shagan Stevens.
Phil
Coulter.
Phil Coulter.
Trevor McDonald.
She's looking at Jerry.
That's Bella Emberg. You would have seen her on the Benny Hill show and all that type of stuff. The Likely Lads. He was one of the Likely Lads, yeah. Jimmy Nesbitt with hair, his own hair.
That's a young Jimmy.
That's a very young Jimmy.
Yeah.
Richard. Crystal Mayes, yes. He also wrote the Rocky Horror Show. Yes, the Rocky Horror Show.
Peter
Ustinov. Uh-huh. Angela Rippon. What role did he play? He was one of the Doctor Who's. Forget his name too. He was a Doctor Who. That was the size of Willie Carson, Luke. Adrian Dunbar, yes.
Is, yeah, uh-huh,
Jesus,
yeah.
Mary and Joseph and the wee donkey, that's over there.
That's right, yeah.
No, she was one of the Liverbirds. Do you remember the Liverbirds? Charlie Drake. Sue Pollard, yes. Heidi High. Yeah. Patrick Moore.
Sky at Night.
Yeah. You wouldn't know him. Sky, he was a great entertainer in his day. Joe Longthorne.
Politician.
Yeah, Paddy Devlin. God, I thought you would have got.
Yeah.
I thought you would have got, yeah, Paddy immediately. Who was that? Newsreader. ITN newsreader, one of the Sandy Gall.
Sandy Gall.
Big pot. Yeah, big pot. Very fit.
EastEnders.
He was
a nasty thing. Pauline Quirk.
He was a Minister of State,
yeah. Yeah. No.
No. Pass that one. I forget his name. It'll come to me before I leave. David Essex. Don't know his name. Are you being served? Is right, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Leslie Crowther, yeah.
Snooker.
John Virgo, well done.
Right, yeah.
Mr. Berg. Yeah. Ina Stubbs, yeah. Terry Scott, very good.
Yeah. Ina Stubbs.
Ina Stubbs.
Countdown.
Countdown, very good.
Yeah.
Carl Vorderman, yeah.
Paul. Yeah.
There you go. That was just some of the guests of the very first year of Kelly, and which was great to get that calibre of people. And because of the troubles we were in at the time, we made a decision then that they wouldn't get on Kelly unless they came to Belfast. I wasn't going to do any interviews down the line. They had to walk in to Armour Road, into UTV, into the Kelly studio. And it was great to get... And we were only a little hick station. Like, UTV is just a local station. It had no idea how to attract names like that. And that went from strength to strength to strength. So that was a very good first year, and that's just what was the... There's my wee saying, you mentioned scriptures. Uh-huh. Yeah. And when you said to me scriptures, I thought, in the name of God, what would I know about scriptures?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I love this. This is what... Normally weddings and that, this would be what happened.
St. Paul's letter to the Corinthians.
The Corinthians, yes. That's, yeah. And you asked me to pick one, and yes, that's the one I would pick. That, yes, to me, defines what it's all about.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for.
Love is always patient and kind.
Love, I love the way that, yeah. There are different variations on it, but that's one.
Yeah.
So I think that means quite a lot.
Yeah. Where's your favourite place to visit, Jerry? Where do you go for a holiday?
Well, we've been. I like it. Well, when the girls were young, because Kelly came off the air in May and didn't come back to June, to September, and I didn't work over those 3 months, so I spent all summer at home. And to be fair, I was earning good money on those days, so we could afford to go for big holidays. So every year we would hire a house in Florida, and we would go there for 2 and 3 weeks, and we would do the whole Disney experience. So we loved that. So there's certain. We did that for 3 or 4 years, and we cruised and so on. So there's a certain love and affinity for Florida. But now that there's just Helena and I, the girls don't come anymore. I like Italy. Helena likes Italy as well. But there are 8 of us together with Martin and a couple of our golfers and their wives. We would sort of go on holiday now, the 8 of us.
Yeah.
So we were in Dubrovnik this year. We were in Gran Canaria a couple of months ago. Yeah. Because Martin has got plenty of money, and Martin takes us on these holidays. I just like, we just like getting away. I'm not a sun worshipper by any remote, but I like a bit of heat on the back and that. So no great favourite place. We just like seeing as many different places as possible. I'm not going to do any more long haul flights now. I can't. I'm too big to sit in a bucket seat in the back of EasyJet.
No, can't do that.
And I can't afford to sit up front, so I'm going nowhere. Yeah.
If you had a choice, Jerry, instead of Martin and Clem and Charlie, you know, if you were to pick someone that you would dearly love to play golf with, who would it be?
Oh, I'd pick Tiger.
Yeah, okay.
To play golf with?
Yeah.
I'd pick Tiger. I'd pick Rory. And I would pick my, just a little bit of interest, my niece, my sister Patricia, that you saw earlier. Her daughter is a dentist here over in Andersonstown. And her son, Denise is my niece, her son won the Mid-American Golf, which qualifies him to play in the Masters in 2 weeks' time. Matthew McLean, his name's Matt McLean, he plays out of Malone. So he's going to he's playing the Masters in 2 weeks' time. So I'll take Matt onto the four ball as well.
Absolutely. So great. Okay. And your favourite course that you've ever played? Leaving aside Hourglass.
We went to Sawgrass, which is coming up in a couple of weeks' time. Next week, we went to Sawgrass in Florida about 10, 12 years ago, longer. And that's something to see.
Beautiful.
That's the one with the island green that you hit onto the island. So we played that.
Beautiful.
So I like that.
Yes. Is there a favourite hole?
The island green. The island, the island, just to be able to stand, because it's so iconic to stand up and play it, that you've seen it on television a million times, to be able to play it. Needless to say, I didn't hit the water.
We've all done that. Jerry, it's been a wonderful pleasure to have you here.
Thank you very much.
I want to thank you so much for, you know, when you got the invite or the wee nudge, you immediately said yes.
I didn't really.
So you did. You weren't too sure who you were saying yes to.
That's it.
Yeah, that's how it.
You were all right. I was frightened to tell Mary no.
No. Yes.
To tell you the truth, Father, I'd rather be sitting at home with putting needles in my eyes rather than sitting here tonight. Yeah, I hate being interviewed. So.
But
you were very good. There's a wee future for you. Should you ever?
Well, I was just wondering. You know, I'm thinking of diverting, you know, into another area.
Don't phone me, but phone somebody.
Yes, phone somebody. But it's been a real pleasure, Jerry. Thank you so much indeed for being here tonight.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed, everyone, for coming tonight. Next Tuesday, our guest is Father Martin O'Hagan, one of the priests. He's parish priest in Newton Ards and Cumber. So we'll hear a bit of his story, and hopefully that'll be lively as well. But thank you very much indeed, Jerry.
Thank you all very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Peter.